You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
No, I won't give in, I won't give in till I'm victorious. And I will defend, I will defend.
That's a heck of a victory on the road, okay? Heck of a victory. Now, there's some things we need to learn from this, right? Okay? We get big leads, we got to learn how to play with it. Offense, you did an outstanding job today. Okay, outstanding job. And then when we got opportunities, we got to take care of football, right? We have a chance to do something really special here with this team because we got a bunch of fighters, guys that want to compete, guys that love to go out and practice and play and do things right. Now, we got to pull together. Let's not make this an individual thing, right? Let's go out. Let's continue to get better. Let's finish these last seven ball games. Let's continue to do that.
Locked On Vikings, Locked On Podcast Network, a Victory Monday. It's the fifth Victory Monday in a row. The Vikings are 7-2. They are still the leaders in the NFC North by two games. It's a five-game winning streak. For the third year in a row, the Vikings can say they've won five consecutive games. It was 38-30 over the Washington Redskins, the former team of one Sage Rosenfels, who had a couple former teams battling yesterday in Washington, in Landover. Sage, it sounds like you were on Washington radio this morning. Are they distraught with their playoff hopes rapidly dwindling?
Well, I think they were trying to, get my opinion on sort of comparing the two ball clubs. You know, Washington obviously has the expensive quarterback in Kirk Cousins, who's not under contract long term. But let's take the quarterback situation out of it. Let's just compare the two ball clubs. And now, if you're a Redskins fan, you watched that game yesterday, you say, you know what, that Vikings team is just a much better team. I mean, the Vikings ran the ball really well yesterday, and I think they ran for just over 100 yards. Mm-hmm. But Latavius Murray was getting 3-4 yards, even 5 yards of push, it looked like, before a defender was even there. So for Redskins fans, that was very concerning. And then also was concerned for Redskins fans was, the Vikings have two really good weapons at wide receiver in that game. A healthy Stephon Diggs seemed like it yesterday. And obviously Adam Thielen with his, monster game there. So Washington just doesn't have those types of weapons on the outside. They've been hurt a lot. Their defense played well the week before at Seattle, but we've talked about Seattle's offensive line being bad all year. So, they just wanted to compare the two teams, and by the end of the interview, it was pretty obvious the Vikings just have a much better football team than the Washington Redskins.
I thought the greatest discrepancy yesterday was between the Vikings receivers and the Redskins receivers. On one hand, you've got Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs combining for 244 yards and two touchdowns. They stretched the field vertically. They had 12 receptions combined. Adam Thielen in particular was just monstrous. He was an alien yesterday. I mean, he had that touchdown where he's got a defender draped all over him. He had another catch at about the 5-yard line, same deal, where he just boxes him out so well with his body. And they were catching everything in sight. Meanwhile, Jamison Crowder probably had his hands on about 4 balls, and the Vikings made some nice plays to break him up, but he was not catching anything contested. Josh Doctson had that play where he fell down in the end zone, would have been a TD. He had another couple plays that could have gone for much more than they did. I thought the Vikings just really outclassed Washington in the passing game.
Yeah, and watching the game on television, it looked like there's a lot of Vikings fans at that game as well, who sort of outclassed the Redskins fans at the home stadium. But yeah, the wide receiver comparison of the two teams was wildly different. Both teams have premier corners, but at the end of the day, the receivers are just so much better for the Vikings. Thielen, he just has so much savvy, and I don't know what his combine time was when he ran the 40, or shooting, he probably wasn't even by to the combine, but whatever his 40 time was coming out, I don't know how strong he is. But the guy has savvy, and you saw it on the touchdown pass when he was completely covered and just sort of found some open space, a little backyard football with Keenum. And by the way, Keenum's a pretty dang good backyard football player of just sort of making things happen when they break down. And then on the other, the very long, absolutely perfectly thrown ball that Case was moving to his left and buying time. And Thielen just ran to open space. I mean, he ran a dig route on that play, coming across the field. Obviously was covered, saw his quarterback, you know, right out of the pocket, and just looked around and saw the green grass down the field, and immediately, you know, went to that space. So just both those two players have a great feel for the game, great feel for how to get open. And Thielen, once that ball's in the air, man, it just seems like he comes down with it 9 out of 10 times. It doesn't seem like it's a 50-50 ball. It seems like about a 90-10 ball. Yeah. I'm feeling is the receiver. So yeah, that was the biggest difference in the two ball clubs is I think the wide receiver position.
Yeah, the joke I made yesterday was the Vikings made Josh Norman look like Josh Robinson, and it's kind of an obscure reference, but he was kind of a poor Vikings corner there in about 2013-14. But Josh Norman was completely outclassed, and using that word a lot, but I mean, he did not look like a top-caliber cornerback yesterday against the Vikings receiving core. He struggled tackling in the run game, I thought, as well, but he was getting burned by Diggs. He was getting burned by Thielen. That's another big difference in that game, is that Norman, I'm sure, was expected to shut down one of those guys, and he didn't shut down either one.
Yeah, and he might be one of those players that when things aren't going well, you know, he seems to play worse, not better. So Norman's an interesting character. He's relied on sort of like Xavier Rhodes in that defense. What's really interesting is going back to Carolina, where he originally came from, you know, I don't know if people know the story, but, you know, he was a four-year player at Carolina. He was franchise tagged, and then Carolina actually took the franchise tag off and let him walk. I think they were sort of frustrated with, you know, they didn't want to give him a huge long-term deal. But when he was there, he was more of a zone corner, you know, good cover two corner, you know, good cover three corner. He was not this man-to-man Xavier Rhodes chase all day, you know, type of player. So he seems to be doing a lot of that in Washington. In some games, he plays well, but some games it seems like he gets exposed in all that man coverage.
Okay, everyone's talking again about the quarterbacks. Obviously, Bridgewater was active yesterday, but Keenum played, and we saw the absolute best of Keenum, and we probably saw at the end there probably the worst of Keenum with those two interceptions. I mean, let's talk about the good, first of all, and you've alluded to it. Buying time, finding guys downfield, he really didn't miss on a deep pass until that interception late where he lofted it up there, but he had great touch, great arc. Those were big-time throws. He had a perfect passer rating at one point with four touchdowns and no picks. Then the back foot floater for the interception, okay, bad decision, but the Vikings were up by 18 at the time. Wasn't too detrimental. But then you've got the pass to the flat for Rudolph that nearly went for a pick six on back-to-back throws. How do you kind of gauge the evaluation there of the phenomenal game that Keenum had, but then the two pretty bad throws that he had as well?
Okay, well, the two interceptions, let's talk about the first one. On that play, Kyle Rudolph was to his left, and he had man coverage. Kyle got jammed at the line, and I think, you know, Case just knew that if he just bought a little bit of time and sort of gave him a chance, at some point Kyle would, you know, sort of win on that corner route. But, you know, the more you stare him down and the higher you sort of throw that ball up, free safety who's playing the middle of the field, what they call is an overlap. He reads the eyes of the quarterback, and he overlaps the strong safety who was in man-to-man coverage on Kyle Rudolph. So, you know, that's one of those plays where you go, you know, I got man-to-man. There's no one else, you know, over there. I'm just going to throw it up there and see if Kyle can go up and get it. And then afterwards, every quarterback has done that in a practice. You go, oh man, the obviously the safety overlap. I can't stare down, you know, my receiver tight end like that. So, you know, that was a bad mistake. You know, he's made so many good plays, when you have a quarterback who buys time and is a little bit of a playmaker. I mean, just like the Thielen throw not too long before that, which was phenomenal. Occasionally, you're gonna, you know, throw it to the other team, and that happened on that play. The second interception was just a straight flat route by Kyle Rudolph, and I truly believe that that Case just didn't see him. I mean, the free safety or that safety who intercepted the ball, who by Swearinger, is that how you say his name, or Swearinger?
Yes.
He had a phenomenal football game. I mean, he is a really good football player, run and pass. But, you know, he was about 8 or 9 yards off, and off of Kyle at the snap. And I believe that that Case has probably assumed, you know, he's running a flat route. I can get him the ball before Swearinger makes a play and it makes a break. But, Swearinger played it very, very well and broke on the football and cut right in front of Rudolph. So, obviously not a good play as a quarterback, but I can see what he was thinking. Yeah, I'm just going to get an easy completion to flat because, you know, the man-to-man strong safety is about 8 or 10 yards off my all-pro, my Pro Bowl tight end.
Yeah, so a career high in touchdown passes for Keenum with 4. He also generated the third streak of his career with an interception in 4 straight games. Mike Zimmer after the game, non-committal about the quarterback position. He said, well, we'll talk about it, and we'll see what we do this week. I've got a plan, but plans don't always work out as you intend. Kind of ambiguous. He's definitely got the people buzzing. We don't know what he's thinking right now. It feels to me like Keenum deserves the next start, to be honest. Against his former team at home, I think it'd be a great story, and you want to see Teddy at some point, but I feel like you have to give Keenum that next look.
I think without a question, and that's, to be honest with you, it does a little bit bother me that Zimmer is not, you know, saying, hey, this guy's our starter. You know, we're winning games. And I tell you what, if a quarterback throws 3 or 4 touchdown passes and throws one pick every week, I'll take it. I'll take a 3-1, you know, every single time. You put the ball in the air 35 or 40 times, you're bound to throw into the other team every once in a while. But, you know, Keenum's doing so many other really good things. The bootleg game is fantastic. I think it's helping out the run game. He hasn't gotten sacked almost at all. I mean, it's really incredible compared to last year when Bradford got, you know, sacked a lot. And they were trying to go a lot of three-step and shoot no-step drops, you know, last year with that offensive line. So I think the thing is with Case is that it's almost like a stereotype. You know, he's a backup quarterback, and that's what probably Mike Zimmer has him at in his mind. That's what some, you know, probably scouts have him at in their mind. He's just not your top-end starter that somebody wants to pay $20 million a year. So no matter how well he plays, if he misses a throw or throws an interception, I sort of feel like there's this, like, well, they're, like, waiting for him to screw up so they can move on. I think it's the wrong way to go. I think Case is playing really good football. I want to see Teddy in there too. I think Teddy's probably the better quarterback when you put him side by side. But a player who has, you got to realize the other 52 guys on the team, if you're out there and you're playing good football and your team is winning 5 in a row and 6 of their last 8 football games with you as a starter, and you're playing winning football, and yet, you know, the head coach is sort of non-committal, what would that say if you're a defensive end or a safety in that type of situation? So I wish they'd be a little bit more firm that, you know, Case is the guy, at least for another game or two. I mean, he should get at least 2 losses in a row before they should take him out.
My hope is that there's more transparency behind the scenes and communication between coach and quarterback than there is between coach and media. And I think that could definitely be the case. I don't know exactly how much communication Zimmer does with his quarterbacks, but it feels to me like this is too sensitive of an issue for him to keep the quarterback in the dark along with the rest of us. So I'm hoping that the plan that Zimmer refers to is sort of is commonly understood by all the people involved. Maybe that's not the case, and maybe that's something I can ask him today at the press conference at about 2 o'clock at Winter Park. But that's going to be a fascinating talker as the week goes on.
I got a question. Let's just say Keenum, gets hurt this week, something that's, nothing major, but, he's out for the rest of the year. Or they end up, for whatever reason, he throws an interception the first quarter and Zimmer puts him on the bench because he really wants to get in Teddy. What happens with Case this offseason? I mean, do you think that a team with how well he has played, and he really actually played pretty well last year with the LA Rams on a pathetic offense. He was 4-5 to start and did a lot of good things. Do you think that a team would come out and give him a Mike Glennon contract? I mean, $15 million a year. I mean, if you're going to pay Kirk Cousins $25 to $30 million next year, somebody's going to pay him that money. You got to think Case is worth 12 to 15. I mean, I think Case outplayed Cousins in that football game. So to me, it's just really interesting how, he's getting sort of stereotyped, and it seems like he's getting sort of the waiting for that shoe to drop so they can quickly hook him out of the football game.
I think if the Vikings could have it their way, I think they would love to pay Keenum and Bridgewater probably not identical contracts, but somewhat similar contracts to the point where together those salaries equal maybe what Bradford was making this year. You know, I don't think Keenum is going to demand eight figures. Maybe he will. Maybe some team will pay him that. And if they do, I don't think the Vikings will match. Feels to me like Bridgewater will get extended or re-signed with almost maybe a bridge deal, maybe a prove-it deal to say, hey, let's see if you can still do this thing, and you'll get rewarded if you do, and we will reward you. And in Keenum's case, I think he will probably want to start somewhere, wouldn't you think? But I guess if he comes back to Minnesota, there's always the chance, well, maybe Teddy can't do it, and maybe it becomes my team again. That's sort of the carrot dangling for him. It's going to be a little awkward, too, if the Vikings try to woo both of them and bring them both back to have a similar kind of question mark every single week. I don't know. How would you handle that if you were GM?
Well, I know this, and I, you know, I've known Spielman since really 2002 when he traded for me when he was down in Miami. And, you know, he sort of has a number in his mind of, like, quarterback allocation, right? So, you know, if your starting quarterback's making $25 million a year and you got to pay your backup $2 million a year, you know, that's $27 million you're allocating to the quarterback position. Right now, next year, they're allocating almost no money to the quarterback position. Obviously, Keenum, a free agent. Bradford probably gone, and then whatever, you know, Teddy's going to make next year. So I don't think that he believes you have to have one guy making 20 and the other guy making two. I do believe that, one, I think both these quarterbacks want to stay on the Vikings. I think they like Pat Shurmur. I think Pat Shurmur has done a fantastic job with this offense. I think they like the team. They like the structure. It seems like a very cohesive team. So I feel like both quarterbacks would like to be back on this Vikings roster, and if you can pay them each, you know, $10 to $12 million, and maybe they're one of, you know, they both have incentives, but just sort of say, hey, you know, either one of you is going to be end up being a starter, we'll let you guys battle it out, and then after a year somebody's going to be gone, but you know, the other, you know, even if you're a backup, you're going to be making $10 or $12 million. I'm not sure if those players would be interested in that, but you know, it's not a terrible way to go to be either be the starter and making good money, or you know, even if you lose the job and you're the backup quarterback to make $12 million, mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing either.
Let's just kind of touch on the defense here for a second. The Vikings gave up 30 points, which was a season high. Obviously, Keenum's interception set up 7 of those points. But Everson Griffin didn't play. He was held out with a foot injury after working out before the game and not having quite the get-off that he wanted to. Do you have any concern about the defense yesterday giving up 30?
A little bit. And again, as you said, it's not really 30. I mean, you could say they gave up, what, 23 points, you know, with the one that was basically a touchdown on the interception. So obviously Everson Griffin makes a big difference on this defense. He is the number one pass rusher. He's a guy that they can't just replace. You can't even have really two guys replace him. And that's why those premier players are so, so valuable. No, I'm not really worried about the defense. I mean, Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback, and they're playing on the road. And at the end of the day, they gave up enough points to win the football game. So it wasn't like they gave up 500 yards of offense yesterday and were just getting embarrassed. They just didn't have their best game, and it probably didn't help. They weren't having one of their best players.
A couple things to watch for from an injury standpoint. Andrew Sandejo left that game with a groin injury, I think, in the fourth quarter. And Xavier Rhodes left a couple times, though it appeared like it was just cramping, and maybe another time had the wind knocked out of him, so he should be fine. And Griffin should be fine as well for next Sunday. And I think the Vikings were a little skeptical about that turf in Washington. They talked about the turf a lot, and honestly, it looked bad. It looked like a golf course in April. Not very well-groomed. Is that kind of a consistent thing in Washington?
That has been... Shoot, my rookie year as a drafted by that team, that field was beautiful for the first week, maybe 2 weeks of the season. But after that, it falls apart very quickly. And what Minnesotans may not realize is that, you know, Washington is sort of this, you know, I always assume it's sort of in the north, but it's one of those cities that's sort of on the north-south border. And they try to put in sort of a southern grass onto that field, and it just never takes very well. It looks beautiful in the year. It looks like a golf course. but after about a game and a half or a couple preseason games, it gets beat up very, very quickly. So then they try to patch it and paint it and all these different things to make it look better. But I think the mistake is they go with some sort of southern grass, like it's, you know, like Nashville or one of those teams that's sort of in the middle of the country. It's not Bermuda like Jacksonville or Miami. So it's always been a bad field. This is early mid-November. You should see it late in December. It's absolutely disastrous. And that's Robert Griffin III. That's one of the reasons he probably tore his ACL years ago, is because the turf was just so terrible.
And that's probably a good reason to hold out your star defensive end. And Zimmer said they didn't want this to become more than a one-week thing, so they held him out. So I bet they get him back against the Rams. And I can't wait to preview this Rams game. That's going to be great.
Should be a good one. Sunday. The next two games for the Vikings are really going to, you know, tell us a lot about their season.
Yeah, no kidding. They're both 7-2, and there could be NFC playoff seeding on the line next week. Hopefully we can get the Lockdown Rams host, Travis Rogers, on the show at some point. Finally, just an update on our picks. You went 2-1 on Sunday, as did I. We all had the same picks. We both missed the Bears. We got the Lions as they sort of flirted with disaster against the Browns, but then the Browns just turned back into a pumpkin, and we both got the Vikings. So you're leading by one game overall in total picks, and you're up by 90 points in our confidence meter picks, 580 to 490, and we're both doing pretty well in the game, to be honest.
What were we thinking on the Bears game? I mean, I tell you what, the Bears seem to be getting worse and worse as the year goes on. They looked good early in the year. Obviously, I remember the first game, they had a very, very close loss to the Atlanta Falcons. And so it seemed like an improved Bears ball club. But, I tell you what, Brett Hundley, I think Brett Hundley is a pretty good quarterback. I mean, he hasn't played great. But for a guy who's really getting his first chance to start some football games on just an okay football team, I think Brett Hundley's playing pretty well. That touchdown pass yesterday just looked a lot like Rodgers. I mean, it was a real quick release and just sort of flung it out there, sort of high back shoulder. That was a really nice play. I think Hundley's done a really nice job for the Packers in the couple games he's now had a chance to start.
Yeah, 18 of 25 for 212, one touchdown, no interceptions yesterday. QB rating of 110.8. Pretty good progress there for Hundley, and maybe gives the Packers a little bit of hope going forward as they try to stay afloat for the possible return of Aaron Rodgers, which I think Vikings fans are all in the back of their mind dreading right now. But if Minnesota takes care of business, they shouldn't have to fret too much about that, because they can put Green Bay away by just winning their games and pulling away in this division.
Well, I was going to say, when is the Vikings-Green Bay matchup,
yeah,
the next one?
Week 16, so Rodgers would be eligible.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see.
That could be a very thick plot with Rodgers versus Barr and sort of the barbs that they've exchanged since the injury. Kind of the he said, he said, well, you know, Barr gave me the finger and Rodgers was shouting F-bombs at me. It's gotten a little heated. That'd be actually pretty good theater to watch if that were to happen.
We will obviously only see that if the Packers are not in contention. I just cannot imagine Rodgers risking it the last 2 weeks just to be in there for no reason. So I guess we'll see. We'll know if Rodgers is going to play, I would assume, based off of the next month of the season.
All right, Sage, we'll talk about the Rams on Wednesday. He's Sage, I'm Sam. It's Locked On Vikings. It's the Locked On Podcast Network.
I will give in till I'm victorious. And I will defend.